Hey everyone, welcome to Sped Homeschool Conversations. Tonight we are going to be talking about creating a new normal and what does that mean and what does that look like in a homeschool. And our guest tonight is Cynthia Herron. Welcome, Cynthia, and thank you for joining us tonight.
I'm glad to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
You are welcome. So you have a blog called Inside Our Normal, where talk about your normal for your family and homeschooling. And so tonight we're going to share a little bit about your story and just how that came to be, because I think we all have different versions of normal.
Oh, yeah.
And that changes on us as we realize what normal really is. We want to thank also Bookshark for sponsoring this episode of Sped Homeschool Conversations. And we want to thank those of you who are joining us live tonight. Just know that you can put your comments and questions in the feed as we're going along. If there's something that you want to add to the conversation, feel free to post that in the comments below. Or if you have a question for Cynthia and you're just dying to ask, feel free to put that in as well. And we will get to those questions as they pop up. So so as we get started, let's get to know you a little bit better. This is the last episode that we're having as we're talking about community awareness for special education homeschooling families. And you volunteered and said, I want to share about my family and what it's like. And you're bringing a different twist into it because we're going to talk about 2E learners and gifted learners as well, which we haven't touched on this month. So I'm excited about that. So how did this whole special education journey start for you?
Well, I always wanted to homeschool, partially because I was labeled as gifted as a kid. And so a lot of my schooling experience in a great public school system, I never felt like I was learning anything. And it was a lot of just waiting for the class to catch up. And so I wanted my kids to be able to run at their own pace. I didn't really understand what that would look like until now that we're living it.
You really don't know until you dive in, right?
Yes. So we have completed 5 years of homeschooling and we are kind of slowly gearing up starting this week for our next homeschool year and kind of easing into it and trying a few things this week ourselves.
So now that you're talking about this, what does easing in look like? Because it's different for every person, but I think also we have this concept for people who haven't homeschooled that we just got to start everything all at the same time. Yes. So what does that look like for you?
So I have 3 kids. I have a 10-year-old who would be in 5th grade. Okay. I have a almost 9-year-old who would be in 4th grade. Mm-hmm. And I have a 6-year-old who would be in 1st grade this year. So we do a lot of our subjects together because I'm one teacher teaching 3 grades and I want to simplify as much as I can by creating some synergy. So we use Sunlight, which is very similar to Bookshark, which is our sponsor. And so that means that we start our day with morning time or couch time. So we do literature, history, science, geography, art all together. So this week we've been reading Aesop's Fables and we've been continuing a theology book that we stopped in the middle with last year, which was a little hard for me, but we're picking up where we left off because we can do that in homeschool. And then today we started our first science lesson, which I'll probably tweak exactly how we do that. They've been doing a little bit of math and reading and writing all summer because actually each kid has one of those areas has their weakness. So we've been kind of trying to keep those going all summer and easing into some of the others, which our family needs that structure to be happy and feel safe. Uh-huh. And so it's been really nice and calming to come back to that this week.
Yeah, it is. That structure, that schedule is kind of reassuring. I know even as a parent, I find that after homeschooling for 17 years, it's our norm.
Yes.
And but I love that you, some things you had to put down that you were in the middle of, some things kept going, and some things started out new, but then you're gradually adding it in. Mm-hmm. And we have that freedom which we and do. You're taking full advantage of it.
Very much so.
That's awesome.
So we'll ramp up completely in the middle of August after we go on vacation. So I know we're not going to try and start too much before then. Right. But I'm eager to test out things, and the kids want the schedule. So we're going for it now.
Well, and that's a great way to look at it. We're kind of testing the waters and seeing how it all works together, because you just don't know until everything comes together. Because in your head, you've got one way of how it's all going to work.
Absolutely.
And it never quite works out that way.
No. Well, and today I realized that I didn't have the activity book for my 6-year-old's reading program that I thought we were all ready to go. And I was like, oh, I can't start that. I don't have all my materials. So I had to order that this morning.
So. Yeah, I've had that happen with audiobooks, or like all the CDs didn't come with my curriculum, and realized that I was like, oh, I need to contact the people I ordered from, because it's not there. Yeah, that's important. So when did you started homeschooling 5 years ago? Did you just kind of hit the ground running and know that this was what you were going to do? Did your kids start all homes in the homeschool, or did you start in public school or private school, or how did that all come together?
We've kind of done a little bit of everything. I started doing some preschool activities, not because I wanted to push my kids, but because I'm not good at playing with my kids and being on the floor playing. So I started doing tot school with them as sort of a way to give myself some structure to do some activities with them, with my oldest. And the older two are 2 years apart. So it kind of gave her some one-on-one with mom. Mm-hmm. So we just kind of did some things. And then at the time we lived in Florida, which has a great state-sponsored pre-K program. So you could go to a variety of preschools for that 4-year-old year. So we tried that for my daughter. And she enjoyed it socially, but we were actually diagnosing both of her younger brothers with medical challenges at the time. So it was very stressful. And she had passed the screening test at the beginning of the year. So there wasn't academically anything for her to learn. So she did one semester, and then we kept her home the second semester because academically she didn't need the readiness, and it was stressful to take her to school. So and my husband made me try her in kindergarten, and we lasted even less time because academically she wasn't ready, and the getting out the door and everything was stressful, with her brothers being younger and behind and things. So it was like, okay, that's enough. We're not trying a third time for her. But that second year, my middle child did go to the pre-K program as a special ed student. Because my middle son, who is currently almost 9, is autistic. So that was a real challenge getting that diagnosed, because we actually missed early intervention. We didn't discover or see any challenges until after we were outside of that. And then it became educationally necessary to get support, which being gifted was a real challenge because that overcompensated for his deficits. And on paper, he didn't look like he needed support. So
right. It really is hard to diagnose kids that have that 2E learning complex, because they do compensate until you get them to the point where they're in unique education challenges, I guess we could call it. And that's when they materialize, or behaviorally when they're in a group.
When he was in pre-K, it was a lot of the sensory challenges. Academically, he was a shining star, and in the small setting, he did great. We actually tried him, because I was as tired of it, last fall for a semester in public school as a third grader. And by 10 a.m. on the first day, he was having a meltdown, because that's when we were done with homeschool. So therefore, he should be done learning. So when we had an IEP meeting that same afternoon, his teacher said, guys, I need help. And I was like, yeah, on paper, you wouldn't see this. But in the classroom, you're seeing his challenges and the support that he really needs. So, and he's back home. We only did one semester, and we said, okay, homeschool is still better, even if it is still quite challenging.
Yeah. So what kind of supports do you provide for him then at home?
A big one is that he gets to take breaks all the time, that he'll take a 5 or 10 minute break between every activity. When we are doing our read alouds in our morning time, he's often walking around the room, bouncing on a yoga ball. Today he just got some little magnetic little balls and sticks that he's really excited to play with, that he gets to stay busy. He gets to walk around. He gets to talk to himself while we're reading. And then when he's doing his independent work, he gets to take a 5 or 10 minute break with a visual timer between every activity, which helps him break it up and get those breaks that he needs.
I love that suggestion with the visual timer, because I had a mom call me last week to ask me how to help her son that is ADHD and can't seem to focus. Mm-hmm. And I told her to take short breaks, you know, because his brain needs a break, and go back. And she's, but I can't get him back. And I think because she had trained him that coming back was going to be a fight and a struggle, because now he was a teenager. You really do have to start young in that visual timer.
We have two of them, and I'm considering getting a third one.
Wow.
We use them for computer time. We use when my 6-year-old was doing dishes, he would use it to motivate him to stay on task with the dishes. My middle son does also have an ADHD diagnosis. They'll take it outside with them when they're playing for breaks. We use them all the time for everything. And so it's great to have two in case one's lost, or then two different kids can use them. And they're color coded. They each have like a rubber casing on them. So we've got two different colors so that they can keep them straight. So, it's it's so simple, and it's a great tool. There's an app too. The same company makes an app. Timer. That makes the red dial ones. I actually found that they actually have an app. I think it's a paid app, but there is an app. So
that might be worth getting paid for it, especially if you're trying to train your child to stay on task. And
yes, I saw it recently. I haven't tested it myself, but I did see that. And I was like, ooh, we're rearranging electronic devices that I'm like, ooh, we might have to put that on some of the new ones.
And it may be cheaper than buying another one. So.
That's true. Yes.
Well, that's really good advice, because I know that that's one thing that a lot of parents say, that, you know, I have to stick with this child when we do activities, but then taking the breaks are necessary. But if we take a break, then we just never come back. And
that was one of the challenges we had. While he was in school, we also went outside and got some more medical advice and worked with a psychologist and just got some more supports in place for us and as a family. That was then a much better environment and a new toolbox, because we'd gotten a lot of tools and worked with a lot of therapists when he was a preschooler, but he'd outgrown all of those tools. And so we didn't know what he needed now that he was 8, 9 and on into those preteen years. So we've got much more of a new toolbox now, which makes it much better for our family, for everyone.
And I think that you make a good point, is that we are never done learning about our kids. You know, we can say that, you know, we're helping them this year with certain goals and, you know, tools that we have gained, but we have to constantly be learning, because there's something that's going to come up next, you know, when they hit those preteen years and their brain fuses and everything else goes berserk, then all your strategies have to change again.
Absolutely.
And we definitely have to stay on our toes. Mm-hmm. So, that's great. So, you say that on your blog, and I should bring that up again. I warned Cynthia ahead of time. My little scroll bar is very tiny, so getting from one image to the other here is quite challenging. I actually had one guy say, I don't wear my bifocals while I'm doing my broadcast, and I can't even see that bar. And I don't think I do wear bifocals as well, and I don't normally wear them when I'm doing the show. So this is your website, and it's called Inside Our Normal. Looks like you've got curriculum choices for 2019-2020 at first, and then easy ways to adapt curriculum for out-of-the-box kids. And I know we're going to talk a little bit about that later, but what else do you want to let people know about your blog and what you offer on there?
Well, I have blogged. We first got married, we moved away from home. So I started blogging 12 years ago when we moved away. And then I took a break because, well, the kids and the challenges happened.
Right.
But it was something I always wanted to come back to, because one of the biggest things that I've learned in the last few years, as we've learned and I've educated myself with all these challenges, is that it's important that we tell our stories as we're going along, because yes, it's much, much better to know that each of us is not alone as we're going through mm-hmm. these challenges. We're in a new community now. We no longer live in Florida. We live in another state now. And mm-hmm. our homeschooling community here is not as diverse. And so it was really hard to have to take him out of public school, but to know online that I have a big community of twice exceptional and out of the box homeschoolers that I can reach out to. And by sharing our stories, we know that those challenges are not unique to our family, and we can help each exactly. other along the way. So mm-hmm. I like mm-hmm. to write so we can share our stories. And that's one reason I'm glad to be here today.
Yeah. We are so happy that you agreed to this, because as I was talking to one of my guests, I think it was a couple of broadcasts ago, we talked about just how when people first start homeschooling, they want the box mm-hmm. because there's some sort of safety in oh, yes. getting that box. And one of the biggest questions my team members were asked at a conference a couple of months ago was, well, they would first give their child's diagnoses and say, now tell me what curriculum will work for them. And they're like, Peggy, all we had to do is keep telling them over and over again that there is no curriculum specific to diagnoses. And yeah. I mean, that's a hard answer to give, but. Mm-hmm.
And this is our first year number 6, that we are not sticking to a box at all. Mm-hmm. And I'm a little scared for myself.
But yeah, it's, you become more eclectic. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a general rule. As you get more comfortable as a teacher, and as you learn more about your children,
yeah,
because it's kind of a mix of both mm-hmm. that you have, and also you become more comfortable with what's available out there. Yes. And where you can source other things mm-hmm. to the point where you go, yes, this will work, that won't. Even, you know, I can pick up a book now and say, no, yes, it's going to work for me, or it's going to work for my child. I mean, I got one left, so it's pretty easy. But yeah, it's hard when you're first starting, because you really don't know what you're looking at.
It's and very
you
true.
Kind of have to get used to that. So as you started out, mm-hmm. what kind of was, I guess, your baseline to start with in starting to grow your own self as a teacher mm-hmm. and also in finding things that you could do with your children that mm-hmm. wasn't like thrown out the window the next day?
So I really loved that I started with my oldest at top school, and I didn't realize how foundational that would be for me. I know that's not where a lot of people get to start. But the first year, my goal was to go do a letter of a week and get to Z. Hmm. And that was it. It took us a year and a half. But yep. I learned how she learned. I learned how much information and how doing that little bit every day actually added up. And when you skipped a day, right. you didn't fail them. I mm-hmm. learned how I wanted to teach. I learned how I wanted to plan. And so I just kind of got to know her, got to know me, and there wasn't the scary part of being, oh my gosh, they're in fourth grade. I can't screw up fourth grade for them. So not everybody gets that luxury. I understand. And I've been talking to many friends locally who are having to make the choice in the middle for various reasons.
Right.
But that was kind of what started for me. And so I had some different things. So I had a lot of great advice about just read books. And so we've always included a lot of picture books. 5 in a row was a program that we started with and did some during pre-K and kindergarten, which is using a picture book and reading it every day, which my kids were not into. Once was enough. But then we bounced off that book. So we would read Grandfather's Journey, which is about a son hearing his grandfather's immigration to America from Japan. And so it meant we would study Japan, and we would study boats because that's how he came. And we would study, you know, different things that were relevant to that story, but it would be a jumping off point.
Right.
And so being able to kind of connect all those subjects is something that I've always loved. We also tried a curriculum called My Father's World and didn't stick with it very long because I had to go to the library every week to get books, which was not my favorite thing to do. And there was a lot of projects involved. And I learned I am not a project person. I do not want to make the mummified hot dog. And I don't want to go out and do all the crafty stuff. I like just reading it in a book. So we are actually, we've used Sunlight now for 2 years. And then we're kind of piecing our own this coming year with kind of the framework of Sunlight, of using kind of having a history book, reading it just a chapter a day, 2 pages a day for science, using a lot of those same techniques that are in their amazing curriculum, but choosing other books that I think will be a better fit for our family. So, so there's great things that I've learned as a teacher, as we've tried different things. And I love it because it's Sunlight or Bookshark, because it's not worksheet based. It's discussion based. And so my two boys with handwriting disabilities aren't slowed down in their comprehension and learning because it's just talking and they're talkers. Right.
Mm-hmm. And you can develop all of those grammar skills, the articulation skills, and basically writing skills by speaking.
Yes.
And you, right, not the hindrance of the actual physical handwriting. And I even found for my kids that once they learned to type, that just opened a whole new world because handwriting was so difficult. It was so painful for them.
And so, we're going to be making that transition some this year as well. That was the discussion we had this morning of Ants writing a question. Here, let's go over the computer and you type for me, Mom. I'm like, okay, you handwrite, you type it yourself, or I will scribe for you for my incoming fourth grader. So, but one thing we're doing, I am not using a writing curriculum for my fourth grader or my kindergarten, first grader this year. And that we're going to be using lap books and notebooking for our geography and our science. And so we're going to put our writing energy into writing in those subjects instead of having a writing curriculum, which we can do because we're homeschooling and we can do that cross-curricular activities.
Exactly. And you can do that all the way into high school. I was telling parents that too, and count it as a double credit as well. There's so much freedom in that ability to do that and really open up areas where your kids do struggle so that it isn't a hindrance and you're so focused on what they can't do instead of what they can do. And I love that you've taken a basic curriculum concept that you find works for you. And now you are just kind of exploding it out into, you know, what does our family want to learn? And that really is, you know, that lifelong love of learning is where we want to push our kids. And if we know there's stories or other things in a curriculum that just won't jive. I know I used a curriculum that said, you know, to sing this song. And I thought my kids are going to run out of the house if I make them sing. So scratch that one off.
Yep.
But you have to give yourself the liberty to say, I am the parent. I'm the teacher. I know how my kids function. Yeah. I know how I function and just rest in that.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm really excited. One thing we're going to be doing this year, I heard Pam Barnhill talk about taking, there's rhythms to our school year and that, you know, winter when you're shut in, you might do more work. But it also means you don't have to try and do everything all year. So she was saying doing certain things at certain times. So I'm doing that with a neighbor. We're in the same co-op. We have a homeschool family across the street that we're best friends with, which is just
that's awesome.
On the jackpot. But she's a hands-on mom. So she's the one that only wants to do the art projects and not read the books. And I'm the one that only wants to read the books. So on the months of the school year that we are not in our larger co-op for our area, we're going to still get together and we're going to do this art class. So I'm going to do the reading the book part and she's going to do the art project book. So I'm really excited to use our strengths and get our kids together and get to learn and know that we're still getting art, even if we're only doing it at the beginning and end of every semester, that it still counts. And it's going to be a great project throughout the year to have that ebb and flow to our year.
Yeah. And I think parents often don't see that as an option. Mm-hmm. Because where we were, if, especially if you were raised in the typical, you know, schooling environment, every subject every day, or at least, you know, every mm-hmm. other day, you know, Monday, Wednesday, Fridays, you do this. And but to take chunks of time, yes. almost like college semesters, you know, mm-hmm. and to be able to add it in and take it out. And how perfect when you're stuck inside most of the winter, which we were when we yeah. lived in Minnesota, just there's nothing happening out there because it's too cold.
Yeah. Well, and so. She had the bright idea. We're going to start with Andrew Pollock because mm. he has lots of splatter art, and we're going to do that one in August when we can be outside and get messy.
Exactly. Because you don't want it on your walls.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's, we're looking forward to be able to use those strengths together. And then it motivates our kids to want to work harder in those subjects because they're doing it with their friends. So it's more fun.
Right. Definitely. It adds a whole new mix to mm-hmm. the environment, which people do, and it'll be different than your co-op. So that'll be nice to have that work out. That's great. Yeah. I would definitely do that. We did that with my daughter this year, not by choice. She just, there was an extra art class that popped up. And I think this is another point to make too. If something comes up, it's okay to put something else down.
Oh yeah. We did that some this year too.
Mm-hmm. And you can always come back to it. Like you said, some of the stuff you did through the year and you picked, or you just left it for the summer and you're picking it up again new this mm-hmm. year. And we often will think in our minds, I'm behind. But what are we yes. behind? We're just behind the idea we had in our head mm-hmm. that we were going to get this finished. So yeah. It's definitely okay.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So
mm-hmm. So we're going to take a quick break to hear from our sponsor, Bookshark. And then when we come back, Cynthia and I are going to talk about just some ways that she has made different work and some ideas she has to share with you on just how to take maybe little ideas of what you're doing now and change it up to make it a more custom fit for your family. I'm excited for you to share that. So she'll be back in just a moment. But I am going to introduce you to our sponsor, Bookshark, and let you know just about one parent's, let's see if I can get this switched around here, one parent's experience with their curriculum. So Bookshark is a curriculum and it's literature based, as Cynthia was talking about. It's a 4-day faith neutral curriculum and you can find them at bookshark.com. But one busy mom, Kim McNary, says, my daughter's on the spectrum as well as has OCD and has instantly taken to this curriculum. It's incredibly structured, which makes us both ecstatic. The books are great and the kits are awesome too. I'm running my daughter to all kinds of appointments, and this curriculum fits in amazingly. We are first year Bookshark customers and happy as a lark. You know, Kim is right. Bookshark's fully planned 4-day school curriculum flexes to match your busy lifestyle. The details instructor's guide lays everything out so clearly that you're prepared to teach in mere minutes each day. Open your guide, gather your resources, and go. They have curriculum for ages 4 to 16 available in all subject packages or as individual academic areas, reading with history, language, arts, science, and math. With Bookshark's literature-rich program, your children will read or have read to them 35 to 50 engaging books a year. You can visit them at bookshark.com to download samples as well as request a catalog. So you can find that there. And I wanted to share one more thing. They have a graphic that they shared with me. And like I said, this little scroll bar is very fun. And I will at some point make it easier to use. But anyways, so this is the information they had to share, and now I can't bring it back up again. But anyways, I tried. So I'm going to bring Cynthia back and definitely check out our sponsor, bookshark.com, at their website. So, all right. So we've been talking about coming outside of what I guess typical normal is called for homeschooling and buying a curriculum in a box. I think one of my guests at one point said 70% of kids, doesn't matter what curriculum you pick up, it will be effective. There's that 30%. And he said, and that's your crowd. And that is so true. Yes. We just have those out of the box kids, but it doesn't mean that we throw the box out. We throw the curriculum out completely. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you talked a little bit about how you kind of changed things up in our first mm-hmm. half an hour. And so what are some ways that if a parent is thinking, okay, I kind of have an idea, but maybe this is my first year, or I've only done this 1 year, or have ideas kind of floating in my head of what might work for my child, how would they even go about of thinking of different ways to approach homeschooling and, you know, just kind of making that step forward? And I also want to remind our audience as you're watching too, if you have questions or comments, maybe you have some things that you do, share them with us. We'd love to see those in the feed. So, but yeah.
So I think the first thing that you can do is if you've purchased a box curriculum, your neighbor gave you one because you didn't want to invest your first year.
Exactly.
Is to rearrange it and adapt it. Make it work for you. Most of all, you don't want to be a slave to the curriculum. It's a tool in your hands to help you teach your child and help them explore and discover the world. So one thing, the first curriculum that I used for my 8-year-old for kindergarten, the handwriting pages, he was not ready for. So I just sort of threw them out and used a couple pieces that we were really liking, the stories we were reading, the verses that tied in, and kind of used that part. And then but I didn't get rid of it because I still had a younger kid. I held on to it.
That's a very good point. Yes.
I just recycled a stack this thick of all the preschool pages because we're headed to first grade. So we definitely don't need them anymore. But then come this summer, those handwriting pages that didn't work for my 8-year-old in kindergarten, I'm using for summer handwriting practice in a different way for my younger child. And he loves it.
Yeah.
So
exactly.
You use the parts that work, hold on to things until you're way past them, because you never know when you can circle back and use them for extra practice or use them in a different way. Originally, they were written to be used to come up with words based on your letter of the week and fill in the holes. Well, I just gave my 6-year-old, because he likes to do things, I gave him a picture dictionary and he was just copying words that he wanted onto the pages and, drawing pictures. And so we used it in a different way, but it gave him some summer structure and some different activities to do. But we threw out the parts that were working, like you were talking about singing the songs, and we've come across that. I was looking at our geography and I'm like, yeah, not doing that part.
Yeah.
we're just not going to waste time on it. I'm not going to feel bad. We're just not going to do it. There's a lot of other ways that they're going to get that same information. And so I'm not going to cry over it or feel guilty that we're not doing it exactly as it's written.
Yes, that's a very good
another
point.
Thing
because we can beat ourselves up about those things.
Oh, absolutely. So another thing is changing the pace and the expectations you have on your kid. Like I said, my 8-year-old, when he did that, he wasn't ready for that level of handwriting. We were using a pre-K writing book for him, which he still spent half the years in tears, and we put it away till the last 2 months, and then he breezed through it and was still that year behind. But then in math, my 6-year-old, he's only one book behind his 5th grade sister. In curriculum, because he's really accelerated and it's the area that she struggles the most in.
Right.
So we just keep going at whatever pace each child needs. And so, and they're done or they need extra time, whatever that is. So it's changing those expectations. You're homeschooling, you have flexibility. Your normal does not need to look like anybody else's as long as there's progress. I loved that part of our, evaluations in Florida was all we had to do was prove progress. And that's what I see each and every year with my kids. And so that's success in homeschooling.
Right. And it's good to get a, if you have to do a standardized test, or if you're doing testing for recording on, you know, an IEP or in other states, in like Oregon is called a PDP. It's good to have a test that also doesn't just go to the norm, but tracks your child's grading on what they had previously, because the norm changes based on who the norm set was for that test each year. But if you can see progress, and that was a very good point that you made, is that is what we're basing growth on, not on how that child lives up to some unknown norm that was generated probably at a different year than the norm they were compared to the year before.
Exactly. Yeah, we've used standard. I've standardized tested my kids now for 2 years, partially because the state we started in, starting in third grade, was when they started testing kids. And so I just wanted it as a benchmark. And it lets me sort of have that norm to compare them. So I've seen that while my daughter, in my mind, made a lot of progress this year, I can see where she still falls compared to her peers. And in this case, she has fallen compared to her peers. So I know that's the area where we're going to work much harder on next year. She excels in language arts, and so I'm not going to put my energy next year into that. She's taking online classes, and so she's going to do those, and I'm not going to sweat the rest. And my energy is going to be helping her with math, because that's where she needs my help the most. And we can choose those emphasis areas as a homeschoolers.
I like too that, you know, you're dividing your time with where her schooling is coming from too. And I think that's a good point to make for parents, is that you can't always do it all.
Absolutely not.
And finding some, it doesn't mean if you have an online curriculum, you have to go full on for that whole curriculum. There are so many options for a class here, you know, or different.
And that's what we use, is a class here and a class there.
Yeah. And it's becoming more popular, but definitely, you know what you need to focus on. And, and a lot of times that one-on-one pace with mom right there really does help them excel much better.
Yeah. Well, and I've slowed down my expectations on her. And today we jumped, she was another child that we stopped in the middle of the math book because we did some other things and started the math book in the middle year. So we ended in the middle of the math book. And so today I was looking through what she's done and there were some problems. So we wrote it out on graph paper, a really simple adaptation that we did. It took some work on my part because I copied the ones that were wrong, but then the graph paper really helped her keep her numbers lined up for the writing skills. So, and she really appreciates, she's like, Mom, this makes such a difference because I can really follow what I did. And I'm like, okay, I guess I'm going to copy every math page onto graph paper. So we'll see how that goes. But you know, it's a really simple change. It's more than just plotting lines on graph paper, that they can really use to line it up. And my 9-year-old is still writing on primary ruled paper, with the dotted line in the middle, because that helps him space his letters the right way. And so I've bought notepads that have that paper. So when he gets his spelling words, that's what he does. The college rule or wide ruled is just confusing to him because he's looking for that middle line, but all the lines are the same. And so that's just how we continue to write so that he can continue to get that spacing and feel comfortable to him. He doesn't necessarily know that all his classmates are writing on other kinds of paper. It's where he's at, and that's what he needs. So that's what we're giving him.
And that is a very minor accommodation. I mean, really, if you take a red marker, you can, you know, draw a red line in the middle. And yeah, it's pretty simple. And would anybody even see that as an accommodation? Probably not. And,
but it's one that was challenged to get him when he was in the classroom because it was work for somebody to do. So with only 3 students, and it's an easy one that we can do at home.
Right. Yeah. I know we had one of our team members wrote a blog. She realized after teaching over a decade in the schools that she had a son that was left-handed and that everything was set up that if he did copy work, his arm was actually over the stuff he was supposed to copy and just how she needed to change that. So just, things as simple as the actual books themselves and the material that your kids are writing on is can make mm-hmm. a huge difference.
Yeah, I actually made a set of copywork pages with my son in mind. They're available on my blog that are Star Wars quotes.
Oh.
So, but they're written in the same format as Handwriting Without Tears. So you have a line of text and then you have a line to write them on. Because if it's a whole bunch to copy and then a blank sheet of paper, that's really overwhelming.
It is.
But these quotes are also more than Luke, I am your father. They're, I pulled them off, you know, a list of Star Wars quotes. And so there's complex literature in there and dialogue. And he has loved copying those this summer. And you can find the link.
Love that.
Yeah.
He's 20 now, so I don't think I get him to do copy work. But
yeah. Well, and it can be a challenge to find appropriate copy work that interests your kid when they're looking for a different kind of writing accommodation to have those lines. He's not ready for wide rule lines to copy large passages. He needs those other kinds of lines. And so that's been really fun to make for him. Yeah. I think he wants some Pokemon in Minecraft coming up next. So
I used to have to change every word problem to something with superheroes in it or Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles or, you know, all of that. But it's amazing the context, you know, you change the context, the work is still the same, but the child is able to engage because all of a sudden you hit that place where they're like, oh, this is interest to me. It's not just some random thing thrown at me.
Yeah, there's a blogger who created Minecraft math drill pages. Actually, I have one right here. I think I had a picture too, but this was her page. So my son's complaint was that they didn't have various characters on them. So he was like, well, I want one with the Minecraft spider on it and not the villager. And so there's the copy work that I made for him as well there, as well as the math Minecraft. But, you know, he won't do a timed app on my phone to drill his math problems, but he's more than willing to do a page because it's got a villager on it or a creeper for multiplication. There's different characters for different operations. But they've been great to motivate them for some summer work and just doing something a little bit different instead of the app, giving them the worksheet, you know, reading the book first instead of last is a great way to add variety and kind of get them reinterested in learning too.
Right. Yeah.
You know, I had another gifted friend tell me that at one point she had to cut up her son's math page into like 9 pages and say, okay, you have to go around the house and find them. You know, you have 9 math pages today. Because that would motivate him to do it, even though it was the same work. That only worked for 2 weeks and then she had to come up with something else. But you know, there is a novelty factor to get motivating our kids, and motivation is everything.
Well, and we as adults, don't we love that when we can change up things? I mean, well, maybe there are some people who like standard norm. I'm not one of them. I like to change things up a lot. And, you know, if there's leftovers in the fridge, it always has to be made some way new. But it's some kids, they are motivated by change.
Right.
And to be able to draw on that, but you have to be creative. And isn't it great that we have bloggers like you and other people who have great ideas, or Pinterest that we can dive into and put those.
One of the adaptions that we made that I took from the public school that he was at that was working was he had a visual schedule on his desk, which told him, because in public school, their classroom is very structured as far as what is done when, unless there's significant changes. So I didn't originally think he was ready for it. I would not have done it for him last fall, but I gave him an assignment book. And so I wrote in it at the beginning of each week, this is, you know, your assignments for the day. But he had full control over what got done when. And so, and often he had better weeks when I would write down what other activities were happening after school. So if he had therapy that day, or if we were going to go to the Y, I would write that down in a different color under his assignments. And so it was enough warning to him to know what was happening. That it really helped him to be able to know and put him in control of what was happening for the day and give him that little bit of control, because I really didn't care if he did math first or reading first. He could have that decision.
I did the same thing too. Those cheap planners from Walmart, Target, and it's a nice record book to have at the end of the year. This is what we did. I always wrote in pencil.
Yes.
Because you never knew what would change. And then I would just save that book for.
Yeah. Well, I've been writing in pen, but they have these new awesome pens called Frixons that are actually gel pens, but they're erasable.
Really?
My daughter turned us on to them. I actually have a whole pack sitting on my desk.
Oh, cool.
But they're gel pens. They're erasable. They're heat. So if you put them on your hot car, your text will all disappear, but just stick it in the freezer and you're fine.
Really?
And it'll reappear.
Wow.
but she had to have them for her grammar class. That's what the teacher suggested. Hmm. So that they could do them in colors, but then be able to erase if there were mistakes. And so I've totally stolen all her pens, and they also make felt tip ones. And so we have a collection of those as well. But they're my new favorite thing. So
that is really neat. Yes.
And then he has fun writing that they're, you know, that his list is written in red or green or purple for the day. And that makes it more fun too, instead of pencil. So, but math is always done in pencil.
So,
and we have a lot of the oversized pencils, Targan, I think that's right. The big yellow premium pencil maker has, I think, a junior size that are about a quarter of an inch in diameter. And so I continue to stock up on a few of those for both of my younger writers because they're struggle. They both have the handwriting disability. And so it's just an easy accommodation to have those available for them.
Yeah. It's a simple low tech again solution, but it really does help because it gives them more control with less small motor involvement and just to do those things. I know people that, you know, will use shaving cream. That's just really messy. But
yeah, we didn't do any of that.
Get to that point, or markers on the windows. And there's so many ideas out there that are so wonderful.
We did use a chalkboard, and I think you have a picture of that.
Oh, yes. Do you use that on a regular basis?
Well, that's a picture from when he was in kindergarten. That's my middle son that you're going to pull up. And this was how we broke the handwriting barrier for him.
Really?
So he was a kindergartner in this picture. And like I said, we were trying to do the pre-K handwriting without tears. So that was already a year behind where he should have been or typically would have been. And we had this in our schoolroom, and his sister, who's very artistic and language, was drawing. And so he drew the octopus. And then I said, well, buddy, let's label it. Just totally off the cuff. I was like, let's see how far I can go with this.
Right.
So he labeled it, and I knew he knew his letters. I knew he could write his letters individually, but we couldn't form words and stuff. So I start spelling it for him. So he starts writing it. So for about 3 months, his handwriting was doing a step-by-step drawing that I would either tell him what shapes to put where, or he would actually, by the end, he was kind of looking at the book. And then we would label the picture on the chalkboard. And then at the end of doing that for a couple months, we sat down with our pre-K Handwriting Without Tears book and flew right through it. He was ready to do that. Part of trying to push him on the chalkboard was that actually I had a friend with similar challenges for her son who was similar age. And she had her school had offered a workshop with some of the therapists at the school. And so the therapist there, the OT, occupational therapist, had talked about that being able to write vertically, like on a chalkboard or a whiteboard, is a building block to being able to sit at a desk and write with paper. So it was a skill. I wasn't going to sit and say, okay, today we're going to write on the chalkboard. But when he started doing this, I jumped on it and I said, okay, this is what we're going to do. And that's what he did. And so we have many pictures of his drawings because then it became something we could text to grandma who lived in another state. And so, hi, kitty. So it became a real motivation for him and he really excited and it watched it really come alive and he really kind of owned it and he could pick what we drew and what animals. And I even had to buy an animal drawing book so that we could draw more animals. And so it was something he really enjoyed, and that really kind of unlocked the writing for him. So, and he was in occupational therapy, and it was not something that that occupational therapist was teaching us. And she was amazing. I love her. I still text her. But so it's great to listen to a lot of different voices and get, there's new tips and tricks everywhere.
There are, and some work for some kids and some don't. And that's the hard thing about, you know, somebody saying, well, this is the answer, you know, but the problem is that was the answer for your child. Mm-hmm. And every child is different. And I love the word that you use, unlocked, because it really is, it's a process. It's a, calculated guessing process. You know, we kind of try to think we're doing it methodically, but whatever comes our way, I always tell parents, if you have a piece about it, try it.
Yeah.
If it's something that it's you're led to by anxiety, give it up. It's really not worth it. But try it out, because some of the craziest things that we have done in our homeschooling years have really been those things, those unlocking moments for my kids. And it's definitely just what you do. So
absolutely. Nope. Yeah. It's all lots and lots of thinking on our feet. And like you said, I always got, I guess one reason I titled my blog Inside Our Normal is I really got tired of people saying, you know, here's the one solution, or here's the top five ways to get your kid to listen. Well, I basically had to decide that anyone who said anything like that, I couldn't even go listen to them. I couldn't read their article, because it wasn't going to work for me. My kids were different enough. Yeah. And instead of feeling burnout or condemned or feeling like I was doing something wrong because this wasn't their five-step process wasn't working, I just had to say, forget it and find our own way. And that's what we've been doing.
Yeah. And the same goes for curriculum too, is that that's why we have so many different curriculum approaches with our partner organizations, because there are some methods that are on there that I would have never used personally, but I know they have worked well for other families. And so why not give them that option if you as a parent, you know, really find comfort in using that type of curriculum, because that's what works for you. And
Well, and I will say the first math curriculum we tried, I thought it was stupid and I got rid of it and it was never going to work for my kids. Mm-hmm. It's the same one they're all using now. I had to buy the blocks a second time.
Oh, no.
And now all three are using them and doing great. And we tried about three or four others in between. And here we are circling back to using it.
So that goes back to your advice of hold on to it.
Yes.
Because
it was less than, let's see, we moved and I sold it before we moved. And by the end of the next year, I was buying the brand, the blocks again, the manipulatives for the curriculum. So it was very much a like, okay, I just ate my own advice because I said we wouldn't do this. And here we were. And that's because we needed to try something different, because the same child with the writing, he got locked up on math. He couldn't carry across place values. He wouldn't cross place values. And we've hit that problem with subtraction and addition, as well as now in multiplication. And Matthew C was their explanation, and their mastery base of an entire year on multiplication has helped drill those concepts and help him master those concepts in a better way. And same for my daughter with learning disabilities. Doing so much multiplication really cements those facts and those methods in her head, and that's what she needs. So
Yeah, and there are a lot of math curriculums that really don't focus a lot of time on those mastery concepts, especially the memorization parts,
right,
where those are building blocks constantly,
right,
for math. And so that's definitely one thing to pay attention to, especially when looking at a math curriculum. Right. Yeah. So then as we kind of wrap up, what about piecing together your own curriculum? And I guess, you know, you're diving into this full-fledged this year. What got you to this point? And I guess, are you feeling pretty confident? Or we're just going to see how it goes and be able to fall back.
One thing, so we were using Sunlight or Bookshark because they're very, they're sister programs. Mm-hmm. So one thing that I was doing with my planning, they send you a big 3-inch binder and all your papers that really could fit in actually a 1-inch binder mm-hmm. of your materials. And so you have everything you're supposed to do this week in all your subjects on one page. Well, that didn't work for me. Mm-hmm. We were on this week on history and this work on science and this week on literature. And so I already had, for the last 2 years, I'd copied all the history lines onto a spreadsheet mm-hmm. and all the literature lines onto a spreadsheet week by week. And then I would just check off the weeks as we went on our own pace on each chart. And so I'd kind of been able to dissect their method to putting the books together. Mm-hmm. And I mean, a big thing was I learned in their science was, oh, this is a great big encyclopedia. Like, how are we going to go through this? Well, the main idea the years we've used it is they open it up to a 2-page spread. You read the 2-page spread. You answer the 2 or 3 questions. Mm. You close it. You put it away. You do the same thing tomorrow. Mm. Well, I can pick up any book and do that. And we did it. I had an art activity book and I hadn't taught the kids art appreciation. There were some fun sticker pages. Mm-hmm. So last year, that's how we did art. Was we opened our sticker book once a week. We did 2 pages. We closed it. We put it away. And at the end of the year, they had some art appreciation.
Yeah.
So this year has we were liking what we've done, but mm-hmm. it was the second year of a 2-year program. I was kind of tired of the books that we were going to mm-hmm. continue to use. And so I was like, well, I don't want to use that part for history. So let me sub out the history. Oh, mm-hmm. we're supposed to do geography this year. Well, I don't really want to do it that way. That one's too fast, too many countries. So let's try this way instead. And so that's kind of what I did. So we could easily jump back into Sunlight next year, which we very well may. But for this mm-hmm. year, we're kind of subbing out things, but using a lot of those same techniques and teaching styles. So I wouldn't say that we're not using Sunlight. We're just subbing out most of the books mm-hmm. and doing our own. Well, in fact, actually, my husband started one of the Sunlight suggested literature books for read alouds at bedtime tonight off of my Sunlight list, because that's how mm-hmm. dad helps, is he reads the chapter books.
Oh, that's awesome.
The literature base with all the great, you know, just stories mm-hmm. that you read, a big pile of chapter books. I didn't want to have to read all those. That's a lot of reading.
Yeah,
but daddy reads bedtime stories. So mm-hmm. I give that pile to daddy and I say, by the end of the school year, please read all these books at bedtime. And he does. So then he's not struggling to pick a book like he was tonight. And my load is lightened. So,
definitely. Yeah.
So they were starting to read the Penderwicks tonight.
Very cool. Yeah, we sub out a lot of the read out louds, and I even do it with my teenagers, but we do it, we travel. And so I just get them as audiobooks. I think we have 30 hours in the car in the next couple of weeks. So we're going to be doing a lot of school on the road, but it works. And you just kind of fill it in, you know, wherever. And
we've used a lot of audiobooks too. Actually, I found my daughter when I went to say goodnight to her before I got on here. She was hiding in her closet with her headphones on with her tablet listening to an audiobook.
Oh,
so
one that that's the thing you want to find doing.
Listen to on repeat. And last year, I did not read our history book. We just turned it on Audible. And because I had bought it previously, gotten a deal because I knew it was one we would be reading later.
Right.
And then I don't have to try and read all of those big historical names because they're in the audiobook. And so if they pronounce them wrong, it's their fault, not my fault.
Right. Yeah, I interviewed Jim Hodges, mm-hmm. who does the Henty books. He's the voice of the Henty mm-hmm. books. And he said sometimes there were sentences he would have to read 3 or 4 times before he would get them right. And they practice.
Yes.
So, yeah, it's better to have somebody that's professional doing it if you can. Yes.
Right. Well, and we're going to be using Story of the World. So my boys are going to have the coloring pages. So I might just copy a few and color myself while we do that. So,
well, that dives into my, I got a blog coming out, not this next week, but the week after, on incorporating mom care into your homeschool schedule. And yes, make it fun for yourself. Definitely. We can. I even picking a book that you like.
Yes. Well, and the art book we're doing, I'm so excited about it. It's called Vincent Starry Night. I read about it on a blog, but it's little vignettes about various art pieces throughout history. So it's kind of a chronological art, but it was not one I've seen anywhere else. I've suddenly seen it on a couple blogs written as like easy ways to do art. So kind of doing it the sunlight way of, we'll just, you know, every week we'll read one or two throughout the week and get some art appreciation discussion. But it's got kind of these stories about what was maybe going through the artist's head and different things, as well as the processes at various points through history. So
yeah,
we're doing the Middle Ages. So there's a lot of great art creation happening then. So
definitely. Yes. You're going to have a very full year.
Oh yeah.
So, well, we have used our whole hour. I could probably need to interview you again, maybe when we're talking about how to be creative with curriculum at some point, and I'll definitely be in touch. But I want to pull up your website again so everybody can look at it. It's insideournormal.com, and this is what it looks like. So you can find Cynthia there and all of her blogs, and definitely check out her curriculum choices for 2019-2020. And I guess probably a lot of the stuff you've just been talking about, and maybe some links in there as well.
Oh, yes. The links are there.
Yeah.
So
that'll make it easy. So you didn't have to keep notes. You can just go to her blog and find it all there. So, well, thanks so much, Cynthia, for sharing your story, for sharing your resources, and just making homeschooling seem more normal when it's out of the box, because that really is the norm, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for having me.
You are welcome. And I also want to thank our Bookshark sponsor for just sponsoring this episode of Sped Homeschool Conversations. And for those of you watching, just know that next week I'm on vacation. So we are actually having a watch party on the Sped Homeschool Facebook page, and we're going to replay my interview with Andrew Pudua, and where we talked about dyslexia, dysgraphia, and writing. It's one of our most watched full-length videos, and so you'll definitely want to be here Tuesday night next week, so July 30th at 8 p.m. That watch party will happen, and you can all chat with each other. So I'm going to be on vacation, though. And then the following week, I'll be back, and we'll have a new broadcast and podcast as I interview someone who is going to be sharing with us about cultivating self-determination and advocacy in your homeschool teen. We have a lot of things coming up next month about how to help your student achieve goals that can be a broad range of goals. We're going to talk about math. We're going to talk about reading goals. We're going to talk about teen goals as far as advocacy, as well as just social emotional skills. So you definitely not want to miss out on that. So thanks for joining us tonight here on Sped Homeschool Conversations. Again, thank you, Bookshark, for your sponsorship. And we will see you all again in a couple weeks live here for the next episode of Sped Homeschool Conversations. Good night, everyone.